This is the tale of the pack, starring Antion Angers. Antion runs. He runs without tiring. He runs sometimes on 2 feet, sometimes scrabbling along on 4 like his packmates. He smells the pine needles. He smells decaying leaves. He smells the water of the creek, its lifefulness, its tiny fishes and pinching crawfish, its weeds and pebbles and rocks and sand. He smells the fresh kill across the water, the hot iron of blood, the lifelessness of the prey, and the rank scent of torn bowel that steams in the frost-bitten air. Antion doesn't remember what happened before. He remembers the present. He remembers the wolves and the pups and the den full of pine boughs and the hot embers of flame that he gave them. He remembers the taste of their fear on his tongue as the flames licked the cave roof, then the taste of worry as he broke the flames, then the taste of gratitude as he mastered the flames during cold winter nights when the snow howled like banshees searching for the Feywild, for the Eladrin who spurned them. His pack is more than one hand's fingers, but less than both. They hunt the wilds with guile and cunning and speed and grace. His pack has strong eyes and strong jaws. Antion's eyes are weak and his jaws are weak, but his body is strong. He has fingers for opening gates and tools for cutting through brush or digging thorns from bloody paws. His nose is strong for a human, but his pack can smell a single vole in a pasture as large as vision. His ears are strong for a human, but his pack can hear a rock's call from the end of the world. But he is part of the pack, so he can do all of this too. Antion leaps on the loose gravel of the creek bank and his foot slips as he jumps, but he still reaches the other bank. His pack howls with laughter at his human gracelessness. Sonia, though her name is not Sonia, leaps over Antion's head and across the creek without even taking 3 strides. Bjorn, though his name is not Bjorn, circles Antion until the man feels as weary as autumn leaves and falls to the ground. And then Jesper, whose name is not Jesper, piles on with so many of the others who have names that are not their names. They nip at Antion's exposed fingertips and ankles, goading him. They want him to become like them. They want him to have the power of the wolf, the strength greater than the strength of the man. They want him to lift the moose like it weighs nothing. They want his eyes to turn the red of blood and his scent to become like the terrifying places of the earth. And he does this. He lifts the adolescent moose like it weighed nothing. He leaps the creek with more adeptness than any of the wolves, and he runs faster than them all. His voice is like thunder on a still plain, and his body glows with a hidden flame. They lag behind, first 1,000 strides, then 100 strides, and then he is over the ridge and they can no longer see him. Antion arrives at the den. He heaves the moose off of his shoulders at this entrance, then falls onto the stone floor shaking. Tova, who is not named Tova, licks his face. She has seen this before. When Jesper arrives, she will nip at his tail in retaliation for his mistreatment of their pet human, perhaps take a chunk out of his ear to make him remember how to behave. All of the pack know Antion's strength, and they also know his limitations. The moose was too far afield, but the pack had become too accustomed to meat in the splendor of their home to feed on it there. Their comfort was Antion's pain. Antion wakes up with the taste of blood in his mouth and the scent of moose in his nose. It is not the hot, fresh smell of meat and blood. It is the smell of wet fur and fear. He rubs his face and shoulders into Greta, whose name is not Greta's fur. She catches him and paws at the mats of fur on his own head. The twin pups Hjalmar and Hjordis, who are neither Hjalmar nor Hjordis, see the jape and practice pouncing on Antion, digging tiny paws into his fur-covered shoulders and matted head. They nip at his exposed ears, and he yowls in jest at their savagery. He compliments their power and strength with his laughs. He stands, bent low in the cave. Light filters from above, from the hole he winnowed in the dome, for he had remembered the choking stench of smoke in the village, and he knew that it dwelt with the cleansing, brutal spirits of flame. A hunk of meat sizzles on the hot rocks that line the fire. It is covered in a layer of brown crust, signs that his friends have tended it for him. He salutes them with a bark, a puny sound from his human throat, but a welcome one. Tova, who is not Tova, answers, mimicking his call. Endian takes out his dagger and stabs the well-cooked meat. He sits, setting it on the ground in front of him. At first, he had tried to eat like the pack, but the worms that lived inside him did not enjoy the food that way and kept escaping from his body. They would wriggle in his waist and cause his guts to roil as they tried to find a path to exit. He'd lain on the floor for a day and a night before remembering how his mother had coaxed the flame and appeased the worms. And they loved hot things, or things that were once hot, and he remembered then that the word for that was cooked. That is when he brought the fire to the pack, and they did not like it, but he had tried to explain that it was not just terrifying ravagers of red and yellow, but also friendly spirits that gave heat and light and made the food ready for worms. In the beginning, they did not understand and kept their distance, but one day he called out to Greta, and she told him that that was not her name, but that she understood the fire, and she would tell the pack not to fear. And from then, Antin had cooked his food, and the worms have stayed inside him, where they belong. The sky is dark now, and a scent is on the air. An unfamiliar scent, and the pack sniffs as one. Antin smells it too. It is the scent of creatures that walk on two legs like him. Even though their territory extends from the creek to the lake, to the mountain to the sunset, and it is clearly marked, the 2 feet do not always understand the marks and walk their noisy paths through it. Antin once saw a group of orcs clamber down a rift in the ground within a half-day's walk of their home. He spent 3 days there watching for their return, but though he saw all manner of 2 feet come and go, he never saw the orcs again. The rift seemed important, but since everyone who went in or came out eventually disappeared, he liked to pretend it didn't exist. Jesper, who is not Jesper, howls and runs from the mouth of the cave. Antin's oldest friend, Tordenblad, is in his hands, the longsword glowing faintly from reflected firelight. Antin is last out of the cave, but he runs like a wyvern chases him. His eyes are not wolf eyes, and he cannot see in the darkness like they can, but he knows the paths and markers like the fingers on his hands. He follows behind, tracking his pack on silent feet. Clouds cover the moon, and the stars hide behind the white curtain, yet Antin does not stumble. The path they follow winds back to the creek. The pack is full of heat and vigor. Antin's skin burns in sympathy. Their throats growl like the sound of water dislodging a stubborn tree from its current. And then the voices rise as one, spying the cadre of goblins. They see the creatures scrutinizing the grass where they dropped the young moose, where they spilled its blood. The two-footed, hot-blooded creatures carry swords, but they are no match for the teeth and paws of wolves. The goblins are slow and dull of thought. They do not have the keen wit of the wolf. The pack splits 3 ways and approaches like deadly jaws. Now the two-footed creatures howl into the depth of the night. Now the two-footed creatures hold their swords up. Now the two-footed creatures brandish flaming torches. But the pack knows fire, and Antin fears no flames, for he is master of the flames, and they trust him. The wolves slow, giving Antin the lead. He is a bolt of lightning, a tornado of devastation, a mystical force unto himself. His body glows with crimson rage, and he leaps the creek with his shining silver blade. The goblins did not expect this. The goblins were not ready for this. The goblins have never seen, must never have seen, a man so full of rage. Tordenblad cuts down two before another raises his sword to fight. A fuzz of power surrounds Tordenblad, and it slices through the cheap iron like teeth through sinew. What was once a sword was now a dirk, and what was once a goblin is now a corpse. The remaining goblins let out a cry of fear just as the pack closes like vicious jaws. Scattering, the goblins attempt to break through the wall of fur and strength, but they are no match for the wolves. Within heartbeats, the goblins are destroyed. The pack revels in this victory, crying to the void with one ferocious howl. But the presence of these corpses unsettles the pack, and Antin feels their unease. He begins to pile the corpses onto one another. Dead goblins attract foul spirits like meat collects flies. The pack drag the bodies together, and Entian collects brush around the pile. He lights the pyre, watching it burn. The sweet and foul smell of burning flesh sparks a memory. He remembers Jesper, whose name was Jesper, but also not Jesper. He remembers Greta, whose name was Greta, but also not Greta. And Bjorn, whose name was Bjorn, but also not Bjorn. He pushes his index finger into the jagged scar that gambols from his temple to the back of his skull. He digs a fingernail into the ragged flesh, crying out in pain as he does so, banishing the member of Greta, sister, of Bjorn, brother, of Jesper, father. 3 times the moon has risen, and Entian feels as though he has drunk foul water. Something is wrong. The capers of Hjalmar and Hjordis, who are not Hjalmar and Hjordis, spark no joy. The rift pulls to him, and Entian pushes himself off the cave floor. He straps Tord and Blad to his back and shuffles from the cave. The twin pups follow, but Tova, who is not Tova, corrals them. She smells the unease, sees the look in his eyes, the sword strapped to his back, and knows that he must go alone. The cold wind bites Entian's skin like summer gnats. Entian walks, his path carved through dead grass. The sun is high in the sky, giving him light but refusing to give up its heat. His shoulders flex, his arms straight as he struggles to keep his heat inside of his furs. That was Entian's trouble with the heat. When the sun gives its own heat freely, Entian's heat wants to stay with him. When the sun withholds its heat, all of Entian's heat wants to visit the sun. The only solution is to become like stone, rigid enough to keep the heat from escaping. The rift is a black scar on the brown earth. Entian examines it closely, walking its perimeter, smelling its scent, listening in its depths. It takes 100 heartbeats to walk around it, and it is a wolf's leap wide. Peering into the void, he cannot spy the bottom. He tosses a rock and counts to 20 before the faint noise of its impact reaches his ears. An earthen ladder carved into one side draws Entian towards it, but he fights its pull. Sunlight fades, and Entian waits. He sparks a flame from bracken and scrub. He hunts a rabbit, knocking an arrow and piercing its eye, and roasts its flesh over the fire. The stars cut holes in the black sky, and Antian's sight becomes dull, and so he waits. The morning arrives with dying embers and a layer of frost on the dead grass. Entian growls at the rift. He spits in it. He paws at the ground around it, attempting to dislodge the feeling that it gives. The sun gives sparkles to the grass, and he runs to wake his bones. He sniffs the air. He tastes rot on his tongue. He sees tracks in the pattern of frost on the grass. The tracks are hot with malice. They exit the rift at the earthen ladder. The tracks should not be there. The tracks do not belong there. He kept watch. His vigil was strong. Entian runs. He runs with arcane exhaustion. He runs on 2 feet, his blood like drums in his ears. He smells the path unceasingly. He smells the rot that came from the rift. He smells the cave with its pack. He smells all of his friends who have names that are not their names. He smells his pack, but it is not his pack. He smells the hot iron of blood. He smells the burning embers of his flame. He smells the family that is not his family. The footprints reach the cave, and all is blood and gore. Jesper, who is no longer Jesper, strove on the stone floor. Tiny rifts dug from stone by powerful nails on powerful paws, but it was not enough. Greta, who is no longer Greta, who was never Greta, sank her jaws into meat, but it was not enough. Bjorn and Sonja, who were never Bjorn nor Sonja, lay outside the entrance, having tried to claw and bite their way back in, but it was not enough. And Tova, whose name was not Tova, shielded Hjalmar and Hjordis behind the fire, as though its spirits could protect them, but it was not enough. If Entian had been here, it may have been enough, but Entian was not here. But this is not the only here where Entian was not. The memories strike him like blasts of heat lightning. His village, the orcs, were they orcs? Were they men? Was there a difference? Hjalmar, Hjordis, He can hear their names and smell their skin, but he cannot see their face. Tove, mother, hid them under a sack of roots. Greta, sister, climbed the tallest tree, but they burned it down. Jesper, Bjorn, father, brother, fought with strength, slew more than fingers and toes, but even gods tire. Sonja, cousin, blood covering a face he can't remember, asking where he had been. Setting snares, hunting rabbits, where else would he be? And the smell of burning flesh was in his nose. And then her eyes opened wide, and Engin felt the blade of the axe against his skull. The rage burns as it never has before. He scours the cave entrance for a trail, but none exists. The tracks arrive, but never depart. He remembers this from the last time, but last time he was merely a child. His body becomes stone, holding the white flame of rage inside, not letting it escape. Not yet. Antin draws Tordenblad, as he had seen his grandfather long ago. In the hair's breadth between memory and prophecy, he speaks a command word in a language he does not know. Clouds gather overhead, but Tordenblad glows with eldritch light as bright as a sun. Its light scours the world of all that it is not. It scours Antin's eyes of all error. In its light, Antin's sight is true. Some magics had been worked upon him, and it melts in the glow of Tordenblad's power. The path is obvious, its weak illusion dismissed. With rage coursing through his skin, Antin runs. The sun hides behind a wall of clouds, chilling the air, but while it hides, Antin's heat is safe inside himself. Antin does not need the sun to follow the path. He sees everything as it is. There are six of them. Five wear armor and carry pikes and swords. The other wears nothing but eldritch protection. Two walk as orcs, four as men. Their footprints ooze with corruption, the feeling of the rift. They return on the same path as they arrive. Antin realizes he must have crossed paths with them as he ran to the den. But he did not see them or even sense their presence, so dull was his mind. But now he was as sharp as Tordenblad. The earth knows the feet of the pack. It knows Antion's feet. The wind knows the name of the pack. It knows Antion's name. The distance melts before his unquenched fire, his feet like hammers pounding the dead grass. The evil ones walk too slowly. They drag injured limbs, parting gifts from Antion's pack. And, before he is ready, before they are ready, Antin spies them. They walk as though they have committed no sins, with the bearing of clerics in the splendor of their gods. The rift looms behind them, closer to they than Antin is to them. They have not seen him. They, perhaps, do not even know he exists. Antin howls. He howls in pain. He howls in sorrow. He howls with the rage of his ancestors. He howls with the voice of his pack. There is none to return his howl, but he howls to spite the world. He sees their shoulders tighten, their hands go to swords. The party darts their heads in every direction, looking for the wolves that they missed, but they see only a man. There is no echoing call of the pack. It is only a man. Only a man. Antion. He rushes towards them, the rage fueling his unnatural speed. He sees them speak quickly to one another, sees them make a choice to stand and fight rather than run for the rift. The humans shout at the orcs and draw their blades. The orcs unsling their bows and send two arrows flying towards him. Andin sees the arrows. They fly true, their black fletchings spiraling, cutting through the air in an arc towards his body. But the orcs do not know Andin's speed, and the shafts strike earth where he had been heartbeats before. Andin darts as the snake slithers and another volley of arrows flies wide of their target. He can smell the stench of orc blood from a torn and bloody leg. He can taste the tang of man blood from a hand now missing three fingers. The orcs let fly once more, realization dawning that this is their last chance to hit him before he strikes. Their arrows do not arc. They fly with perfect precision directly at Antin's chest. At the last instant, he raises Tordenblad and slices the arrows from the air, first one, then the other. The sharpened head of one still grazes Antion's ribs, a stream of blood cut through the flesh of his side. Antion feels a glamour come over him, and for an instant he sees himself from outside himself. He sees his shaggy form tearing across the brown earth, a blade in his hands and his eyes as red as blood. His body wants to sleep. It wants to fall down and dream of his pack. It wants to rest. But Thordenblad has not been satisfied. Thordenblad does not want to sleep. Thordenblad needs blood. Antion snaps back to his body, feels the blade in his hand, and leaps as Sonya, who was never Sonya, would leap. Over the heads of the men with swords, beyond the orcs with pikes, Thordenblad seeks the one who tried to charm his owner, and it finds the mage who is missing two fingers. The ethereal armor he wears is like an apple's skin against Antion's eldritch weapon. He falls to the ground, cleaved in twain below the ribcage, his blood drenching the ground and Antion's face. Steel bites into Antion's side. There is no pack to protect his blind side, and Antion howls in pain. Twisting around, he sees the orcs and men holding spears, pikes, swords. This is how his pack must have felt. Even the great Thordenblad is not long enough to reach their unarmored joints and hands. Blood in the cave, blood on the fur. But Antion is no wolf. No matter how much he desired to be, no matter how much he longed for a family, he was never a wolf. He was a man. Quick as a wolf, he snaps his hand around the haft of the pike that drew his blood and wrenches it from the hand of the orc. Spinning it deftly, he thrusts it through the neck of its former owner. The orc's shield falls to the ground, and Antion presses the attack. The men, cowards to Antion's eyes, shrink behind the single shield of the orc. As Antion bellows his rage, the lone orc tosses his shield and runs off towards the rift. The three men shout, their hot breath manifesting curses in the cold air. They encircle Antion, their swords as dull as their eyes. The scent of their fear fills the air. Their confusion, how this could have all gone so wrong, permeates every movement. One lunges at Antion, but he is slow, too slow. Antion parries his blade, and Thordenblad flashes with its eldritch light. The barbarian kicks his attacker, sending him sprawling toward his compatriot. Before the other man can think to move, Thordenblad is sunk deep into his chest. The armor that he is wearing is no match for Antion's strength. Antion hears the third man attempt to sneak up and attack him from behind. As the dagger plunges towards his back, the barbarian spins to face the man, whose face is now a mask of terror. Antion is an avatar of death, blood-soaked and wild eyes. The man's terror is not ill-placed, for he has never before faced anything that deserved such fear. The lambent glow of Thordenblad is the last thing he sees, as his head is struck from his body. For two heartbeats, Antion forgets about the last man. It is too long. The warrior slices the barbarian's right hamstring, bringing an explosion of pain, but he does not fall. A wound that would strike down a normal man is no match for Antion's stalwart will. But as he plants his foot, his will endures, but his body fails. His leg gives out from under him, and he cascades downwards, sprawling upon the blood-soaked earth. The warrior laughs, his black teeth in a joyful rictus, as he plunges his sword toward Antion's chest. As the tip bites home, the barbarian snaps his bare hands around the blade. Its edge bites into his skin, the blood gushing from his hand, but Antion arrests the blade's movement. The warrior leans on it, trying to exert his power over the prone figure, but Antion is an unstoppable force. With one hand, he forces the blade from his chest, and with the other, he swings with the ferocity of a wolf. Thordenblad flashes as it sinks deeply into the warrior's side, the grin frozen on his face for eternity. Upon the bare earth, Antion grieves. The heat leaks out from the holes in his hands, chest, hamstring, and side. He can feel it try to make its way into the ground, to travel to the warm places of the earth, to the hot springs and volcanoes and terrifying caverns in dark depths. Thordenblad slips from his hands, and he dreams of fresh honeycombs and venison, of lefse and ale. He dreams of groves of oaks reaching their thick trunks towards the sky, of bushes full of wild raspberries and strawberry vines creeping along the ground. He dreams of wolves and men, of death and destruction, of life and renewal. He dreams all of this in an instant, for he feels something tugging him back towards consciousness. He is cold. The heat has left him, finding friendship with the blood-soaked earth. His eyes open, and he sees the face of the orc who retreated. The orc holds Tordenblad in his hand, and as Antion stirs, he places his other hand upon the hilt and prepares to bring the sword down upon his head. The world moves as though in honey, for as the blade makes its arc, an arrow sprouts from the eye of the orc, a white-fletched arrow that has burrowed itself through the orc's skull. The creature falls dead, and Tordenblad slips from its hand. A scent Andion has not smelled before approaches. It is like orc, yes, but also unlike orc. It comes on light feet that barely touch the ground, while also carrying a heavy frame. Andion turns his head to look, but the blood and the heat that have left him have taken his thoughts away as well. He sees her form approaching, sees her surveying the carnage of his rage. She binds his chest and hand, and Antion is powerless to stop her. Another smell approaches, then another. Nothing is clear. Everything is turning dark again. "She didn't introduce herself, but her name's Delaney," a voice says. "I'm Jocelyn, and this is Sideshow. We hope you don't mind that we're saving your life."